It was a shock to many in the literary world yesterday to hear of the death of one of New Zealand's most distinguished book editors, Stephen Stratford. Stephen had more than 30 years' experience as an editor and author, working with major publishers and private clients in every genre, from fiction to memoir to sport. He was a founding trustee of the Auckland Writers Festival. He's edited more than 100 books and he's been a judge of the New Zealand Book Awards. Author and friend Graham Lay joins me now. Hi, Graham.
Hi, Karen.
I was devastated to hear this news, Graham. It came out of the blue.
Like all shocking deaths that come out of the blue, you know, it takes a while to get used to. And all day today and most of last night, I was trying to adjust to the fact that we're not going to see Stephen anymore. You know, he's been part of my life, my professional life and personal life since the late 1980s, really, when he worked for Metro magazine. And his contribution to New Zealand literature is immense. He was undoubtedly the finest editor in New Zealand working at the moment. And as you pointed out in your introduction, he's edited numberless books of fiction and non-fiction and poetry. So his contributions have been immense, and it's really hard to get my head around the fact that he won't be here anymore.
I'd call him legendary, Graham, but I know he'd scoff at me.
Yes, he didn't like words like that.
No, he'd edit it out.
Yes, that's right. He had a great instinct for what Hemingway called bullshit. You know, he didn't like his editing, took no heed of fashion or fad or political correctness. He just assessed the work as it stood on and assessed it on literary grounds, which was exactly the right thing to do. So a word like legendary would have gone right out. Well, the pencil would have been struck through it immediately.
Yes. And SS, as we know him by, he's edited two novels of mine, and I know many of yours, and he never once made me feel like he was being heavy-handed with the prose.
Yeah, he had the right touch. He was sensitive to people's literary feelings. And he could point things out to you, but he did it in such a way that you couldn't possibly take exception because he knew he was improving it. You know, you knew that what he was saying made common sense. And I know he worked hard on your Foxcliffe novel. Did he do the Emerald Budgie one as well?
No, he did Winged Helmet, White Horse.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And I know he worked with you on practically, how many books has he worked with you on?
Seven. Mm. But we also collaborated on short story collections. I had this idea back in the 1990s of getting together some short stories, stories of not more than 500 words, and I suggested it to Stephen. He liked the idea because he'd published some of them in, quote-unquote, the magazine, the literary and arts magazine that he edited from 1993 to 97. Working with Stephen was fun because he has such a great sense of humour.
Can you tell us a little bit about his life? I know he started editing books for Oxford University Press in 1983, and then did he go out on his own?
Well, he grew up in Tauranga, and then when he left school, he enrolled at Auckland University, and he studied various subjects, but he didn't like any of them. I know he was one of Bernard Brown's students at the law school, and then I think he did some philosophy, anthropology, never finished any of the degrees because he got so fed up with the poor standard of teaching. And he's kind of drifted into journalism, sub-editing for The Listener. And then he became deputy editor of Metro magazine under the leadership of Warwick Roger, the prickly fellow that he was. Stephen seemed to manage to get on with him most of the time. But he did a great job at Metro because he broadened the scope of the magazine to include literary contributions, short stories and poetry and a lot of book reviews. And so he became the deputy editor of Metro. And then he decided he wanted to start his own magazine using the experience that he'd got at The Listener and at Metro, and he called his new magazine, quote-unquote, and it was launched, and it lasted for several years, but then fell victim to economic realities, and not enough people were subscribing to it, and it was a great shame, I thought, because writers loved the magazine. It gave great coverage to New Zealand literature. And then after he finished with quote-unquote, he decided to become a totally freelance writer, editor, and manuscript assessor. And because he had such skills, he was much in demand from all the major publishers wanted Stephen to edit their work. And he's made a living at that for the last, since 1998. And at some stage, must have been about 10 or 12 years ago, he moved down to Cambridge in the Waikato. He and Sarah bought a house down there. And when I asked him after a year or two how it was going, he said, "Oh, it's great, great down here. If I was still living in Mount Eden, I'd be moaning about the weather and the traffic and the drafty old villa that we have to live in." All that he'd put behind him. And I think he and Sarah found it really, really comfortable and agreeable in all ways living in Cambridge.
And a couple of girls too, their family.
Yes, two girls now in their late teens, Madeline and Sophia. I imagine they're feeling his loss terribly at the moment, and of course Sarah will be too. So yeah, it's he'll leave a big hole in lots of lives.
As a book editor, unsurpassed really, we talked a little bit about that, and what was also great about Stephen is that he understood the perspective from an author's perspective. And
yes.
In an essay that he wrote in 2016, such a great essay, "Mainstream publishers," he said, "can frankly be a bit crap," and talked about the situation in New Zealand, but they loved him too because he was able to deliver.
Yeah, you know, they say behind every great book there's a great editor. Well, certainly true with Stephen, but they're usually the unsung heroes. You know, people don't know what they've done, how much work has gone into the treatment of the text and the improving of it. I mean, he made such a difference to my books. I was immensely grateful to him. And listening to the comments of other clients of his whose work he edited, you know, they all say the same thing, that Stephen made a difference to the quality of the final finished book. And that's a great compliment to him, I think.
In this essay, Graham, which is quite fulsome and very amusing, because he was very amusing, "What I Dread, number one, was when meeting someone new, the question I most dread is, what do you do? It is really hard to answer. As a freelancer, I do lots of different stuff, writing manuscripts, assessing manuscripts, editing manuscripts. I never call myself a writer. At best, I am an author. It is too tedious to explain what assessing manuscripts means."
Yes, that's right. It is hard to explain unless you've been an author yourself. But he was an author. He wrote, I think, 14 books of his own, you know. So he saw things from both angles, and that helped his editing, no doubt. But as I said, if the editor's done their work properly, it should be invisible. You know what they've done. The text should be so good that you can't detect the magic hand of the editor. Stephen knew lots about music. You would have known that, Karen, that his knowledge of music, classical right through to the hard rock, he knew a lot about music, and that was helpful too, because a lot of books have a music aspect to them. And I think he played the guitar in a band in the 1970s, I think. So that was an extra string to his bow. So, you know, as well as having to know about grammar and syntax and spelling and so on, knowing the background to a lot of the settings of fiction in particular is an enormous advantage. One of the books he recently edited was Judith Collins' memoir. And she gives him credit on the back cover of the book, which I haven't read. Now, Stephen let me know how much he enjoyed working with her because he knew that would annoy me.
He was surprisingly and unabashedly a right winger.
Only towards the end of his life. He was a fervent left-winger when he was much younger. He marched against the Springbok tour and all those things that that left-wingers have to do. But somewhere along the line, he decided that he would go the other way. And I think living in Cambridge fitted really nicely to that.
So, Graham, what are you going to miss most about him?
I think his jokes, his laughter. He had a marvellous sense of humour. And I've kept the note that he gave me when I babysat Madeline when she was an infant and Stephen had to go to Wellington for a literary selection meeting. And Sarah was working. And it was so funny, all the things that I had to do with her food and her nappy changing and her sleeping arrangements and so on. I've kept it all this year. Every time I read it, I just about crack up laughter. It's such a... It's an epic piece of comic writing. So it's his sense of humour, I think, would be the thing that I would miss most of all.
And in these COVID days, unfortunately, won't be able to have a gathering.
Not for a while, anyway.
Not for a while.
Perhaps when things are opened up, we'll definitely commemorate his passing in some way, and probably with a long, cheerful, liquid lunch somewhere in the central city.
In praise of SS.
That's right. That's right.
Graham, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for your interest, Karen.
It's author Graham Lay paying tribute to editor and author Stephen Stratford, who died yesterday, aged 68.